The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful, beautiful Tuesday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call today on the show, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can, if you are in the Family Islands, call us on 242-300-5720. That's 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas Channel 969, or you can catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. Just so you know the lay of the land today, I am going to be speaking with a very special gentleman to me and so many other men, and I imagine many others, maybe females in the world. about something very important. That's in the first hour. And then after that, we're going to take up some of these issues that are of a more economic and political and social nature. As many of you know, I went to the Cleveland Clinic for an executive physical maybe 5 years ago or so. When I went there, you know, one of the things that you always do is, and I do annual physicals, men. Every year I go get myself checked out, men, annually. And in the course of doing that, they track your PSA as a man. That's your prostate-specific antigen. And mine was normal for a long time, but then on that last visit some 5 years ago, it had elevated from about a little under 2 to about 4 or something like that. And the lady looked at me. I had a female doctor. She looked at me and she says, "You need to go and get that checked out. You need to see your urologist and go get it checked out." Well, I came home and had an appointment with Dr. Robin Roberts, renowned urologist in the country. And he said to me, he said, "You know, yeah, that's something that we ought to pay attention to," he says, "but I like to track the rate of increase, because an increase doesn't necessarily mean that you have prostate cancer or something." And so that's what we did, and we tracked it for a couple of years, and lo and behold, it was getting up there. And then we went ahead and did some MRIs, which were not conclusive. And then eventually Doc said, "We have to do a biopsy," which he did. And the results came back: "You, sir, have prostate cancer. Early stage, thankfully." And so we went about the business of deciding how to treat it. I eventually decided on a radical prostatectomy, which was done by himself and another doctor right at the Princess Margaret Hospital. And then subsequent to that, I ended up doing some radiation treatment. And to date, I mean, so far, things look like they are good. But I have with me today, talk in this first hour, the men and the women who love them and the other people who love them about this issue of men's health. Dr. Robin Roberts, welcome, sir. You're muted. Doc, you went back into surgery.
Good, I'm back. You great. Okay, good. Good afternoon.
Welcome,
great
sir.
Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. It's time. I think it's time. It's time we talk to men. And the people, and the people who love them.
I wanted to just expand on your first statement that you made. You went to the Cleveland Clinic. And
yes,
the Cleveland Clinic did a very interesting survey online for men as to looking after their health.
Okay.
And while they had over 80% of the men said, yes, we want to live more healthy because we have to look after our friends and our family. The fact of the matter is that only 50% of them actually participate in preventive care. And then they said, but listen, you know, what's this issue? And the study showed that 70% of the men would rather complete household chores like cleaning the bathroom instead of visiting their doctor.
Wow.
77% of men in domestic partnerships or marriages would prefer shopping with their significant other as opposed to going to the doctor. And the study also indicated that 20% of men are not completely honest with their physicians.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally concluded that the top reasons, for stretching the truth included embarrassment. Half of the men felt embarrassed to go look after their health or to talk about it. You had a third of them that are reluctant to face the diagnosis, even if something was clearly wrong. And then they were unwilling to hear about necessary diet and lifestyle changes. One third of the men.
Wow.
So when you start to look at, this was a study done of almost 2,000 men a couple of years ago at the Cleveland Clinic, trying to determine why is it that so many men come when it's too late or they should have come earlier.
And then we wonder why men's mortality is much shorter than that of women, eh? I mean,
And there have been so many studies to show very clearly. They ask the question, why do men come, why do they seem to have poor health-seeking behaviors? And what do they find? We don't get our annual checkup. We are less likely to visit the doctor. We are less likely to notice signs of illness. Most of them go only if the women nag them and insist that they go. And then they admit they waited too long.
What is true, Doc? That doesn't relate merely to, say, average men per se or non-educated men. Lots of educated men
that I've
spoken to.
This is straight across the board.
I'm telling you. I talk to men of my professional status, my educational status, and when I talk to them about my prostate cancer, they say, man, you know, I never get my prostate check. What?
I tell you, straight across the board. You know, one of the patients I like to quote was a patient who was a pilot who came to see me because his blood test was elevated. I never came back to have it repeated until 2 years later. And unfortunately, when he came at this time, he had just retired, was about to go on vacation. But unfortunately, his PSA expired about 5 times in that period of time. And so all the money he had saved to go on that fantastic vacation, he used it up in his medical bills, and he died within 2 years.
Wow. Wow.
Reality. And then, you know, and you ask, you say, well, why don't men access the healthcare system? Well, on the one side, you have a lot of men that don't know. So that is why we have a program like this and we are ongoing and men trying to be challenged them to educate themselves. But then you have a lot of other men who don't want to know. We were raised not to know. And a lot of us, they deny if we know. So you got a fair amount of men who know, right? But they don't do. You know, those are so when you look at healthcare and men looking after themselves, you really have to ask the question with regards to what is our responsibility to ourselves?
Well, you know, the thing about it is my mother used to have this kind of running joke with us and our family. They say, boy, you see that man right there? If he feel it, he can enter the doctor. That's me, right? I want to know what's happening. I want to fix the problem. And I can't really say why and how I adopted that attitude, but I can tell you it has served me extremely well. But it's kind of attitude I have about most things. I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And what I don't know, I go get professional advice and guidance on, because I don't want to be in the guessing business.
You know, and if you look at any country and you say, well, what are the common diseases that we see here? And let me tell you, we are not a healthy country at all. We are not a healthy country. We are world leaders. Okay, and many of the diseases that are preventable. We're in the top three when it comes to obesity. Similarly, when it comes to hypertension. Similarly, when it comes to diabetes. Similarly, when it comes to high cholesterol. And men are leading the charge too. We know these things. All of these things, right, are preventable if we undergo the routine checkups that we need to have, and we do the things that we should be doing. And the things we should be doing, you know, they are not great, you know. Mm. Are not great. You know, mm-hmm. One time I'd go, our parents would say, oh, you gotta eat your vegetables. You gotta eat your fruits. You gotta go outside and play. Right? We don't eat like that anymore.
Mm-hmm. It comes full circle when you get older, man. Like, I'm in my 50s now, and I am so conscious. I mean, I'm so conscious of how I eat, how I move, you know, how I exercise, how I rest. I take my sleep, like, I'm passionate now about trying to make sure I get quality sleep, because all those things that we were told we needed to pay attention to, now really they quality of life issues for me at my age.
Yeah. Well, you know, my patients will tell you, I am a stickler in my office. There are signs up that the most important thing you need to do every day is get your medicine. What's that medicine? Exercise. Mm-hmm. Daily. Mm-hmm. You should be very careful how you eat and what you eat and how much you eat. There aren't that many fancy things that we need to be concerned about in terms of all the supplements I admire one group of people. I admire in terms of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I admire the Seventh-day Adventists. Mm-hmm. They are very adherent to their diet, particularly those on a vegetarian-based diet. And mm-hmm. do you know what the evidence shows when they look at those communities of people, like in California? You look at in a community where you have predominantly Seventh-day Adventists, or you look in places like in Japan, in Okinawa, where you have individuals that live primarily off the feet of the land, high vegetarian diet, primarily only fish. They exercise every day. They call these the blue zones. They are areas in the world where you have the highest percentage of that live to be 100 years or more. And when you look at that, when you look at that society where they predominantly have a high vegetarian diet, they have significantly lower levels of high blood pressure, of diabetes, and all the cancers. You know, magic science.
Yeah. And anyone who's, you know, if you practice that lifestyle, or if you practice a nutrient-dense lifestyle that may still have meats in it, you see the difference. You observe the difference in your metabolic health. You can feel the difference in the way you sleep, the way you wake up, the way your stomach. You know, one of the biggest things, Doc, that I've come to notice is how my stomach feels on a regular basis, because not only what I eat, but the order in which I eat. Like, now I will eat my proteins first. my vegetables next, and then I will eat my starch if I have any starch in my diet. And that order makes it different to how your body feels. Adding things like yogurt and nuts and sauerkraut and these kinds of things makes a huge difference to all the things that I observe positively in my body and in my health and the way I feel.
Yeah, I'd like to explain to the audience the difference between being healthy, okay, or what defining health, and the define undertaking what we call a wellness to living. See, the old days of defining health, we would say a state of physical and mental well-being and not the absence of disease.
Mm.
So I use the example of an 18 or 20-year-old. You will find if you were to examine them, they are perfectly healthy. All the blood tests, all the x-rays, everything you will do, and you will say they're in a state of health. But now you watch that kid smoking his cigarettes every day or smoking his grass every day. That's not healthy living. Okay, so we don't. I don't like the word, the definition for health. I much prefer to say to people, I don't want you to be healthy. I want you to be well, to practice wellness. Now, wellness has a different definition. Well, a lifestyle approach to the pursuit. So it's something you continuously trying to do of the best health, the optimal health that you could get into. Now, when you define wellness like that, okay, then it means that every day, is the best example is that when you have an alcoholic and he stops drinking, he makes a vow, he makes a commitment that every day I will not drink today. He doesn't say he's alcohol free, he stopped drinking. He says every day is a challenge. Well, that's how your healthcare is. Every day you wake up, you have to say, I will do only healthy things today. And I will try to live that. And if you look at what makes us well, if you look at what we call the five pillars of wellness, the first pillar is your personal responsibility. You go get your checkup. You're responsible to get your exercise. You're responsible to eat how you're supposed to do. You are not supposed to have your spouse or a friend telling you to go see the doctor. But yet still, the studies show that more than half of the men, and some study up to 60, 70% of men who actually go to see the doctor for routine checkup is because their spouse nagged them. So their spouse, so women are a very important part of men seeking better health.
I have a text right now. This seems like a female saying, good day. I don't feel I need the knife. No grown man to go to the doctor.
Yeah. And she's right. That's right. That's the first thing. It's your personal responsibility. That's right. No one's supposed to be telling you that. The second level is exercising. The important exercise, you should be exercising every day. The third one is nutrition. Okay. And you should know the right things to eat, a more vegetarian-based diet. Okay, and the fourth one is stress. Okay, you know, we live in a very stressful environment. And I always, and one of the most stressful, but I'm not going to get into the partner business because, boy, when you live with someone that you can't stand or you feel you made the wrong choice or whatever, that is very stressful. but you know, the major component that happens in relationships, and the major component is finance. And the old, like put it the way the old people, my mom used to say, son, don't hang your basket too high. Okay, don't hang your basket too high. So when you come out and you want to, you know, you want to buy a new car, you want to have a nice house, not to say that these are not things you should admire and aspire to, but you need to plan for them. You need to work for them. You need to save for them. Okay? And you can't do that when you have 5 and 6 kids. You can't do that as a man when you are. I had just 2 days ago, I had to do an emergency procedure on a patient in the PMH. And as I was talking to him, because he had one of these problems, male-related only problems, and I said to him, "Chief, how many children?" He was proud to tell me he had 6 children with 6 different women. I want you to imagine that if he really was being and wanted to participate in the welfare of his children, to make sure they're eating properly every day, to make sure they're going to school, to help them with their homework, to take them to be a father figure for them, that's a write-off. Okay? Your responsibility that you need to plan your family, when you should have them, and how you should have them, and where you should have them, and with whom you should have them. These are all healthy aspects of living. This is wellness.
But you know, Doc, my own observation, not only in the lives of others, but in my own personal life, is this. You know, I think that there are lots of men who have a general belief that they need to do better about their health, whether that's eating, exercising, et cetera, and may even have an interest to do so. But I will tell you, even me, I found like it's a lot of work first to get the proper information, because there's a lot of stuff out there, man. People, whether it's you getting it off of YouTube or online or for people saying it to you or off the radio, you have a lot of stuff out there, navigating through that so that you can, in your own practical set of circumstances, because not all of us live in the same situation. Not all of us can afford the same level of eating and diet and so forth and exercise regime that some people might say they go to the gym. Like navigating through that space, I think, is challenging. What should men do, maybe in terms of finding just basic ways to begin a process toward good health? Because it can be a little complicated.
Let me take you to a different level here, Shivago. See, what you are now talking about is at one level, you have a personal responsibility.
Yes.
But at another level, you're looking at the public health. You're looking at the health of the entire population.
Right.
And when you do that, then you're talking about what we call the essential functions of public health. So what is the role that we look at as a public, that we consider the common good? The government steps in here. What is the responsibility of the government? So these are the things, for example, legislating, how many alcohol, in the Caribbean, we call them rum shops or bar, how you should have them, the sale of cigarettes, the things such as the children, who should be selling in the school and what they are selling or near the school. You're looking at the public grounds. Is it safe for people to walk? Are they well kept? Are they well lit? Okay. You look at public safety in terms of seatbelt wearing, in terms of enforcing our laws. You know, one of the most frightening things I see on the road every day is I watch these guys on these dirt bikes, and they drive with impunity in the middle of traffic on one wheel. They don't stop at stop signs. They don't stop on the red lights, and they come in packs. And as if they can do anything they want to do, how they want to do. These are all issues of public health and the role that the government plays in creating the environment for the individual
and
to practice good healthy behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. And public education, with the greatest respect, with the government of the Bahamas, and this spans over administrations, including the ones to which I belong. They have a very high appreciation of information when they champion it and public relations it. But when it comes to educating the Bahamian society, they want to go cheap on it. And it is disgraceful. There is no reason why we couldn't use all these media that we have to give Bahamians solid, sound information about how you can do within the context of our own cultural environment to improve your health. I mean, the public health ministry could have good and solid millions to do that work.
Well, message out. I I just want to show you a little something where the challenge comes in terms of government and their role. Okay? I was just looking up as I was speaking to you. The Koch campaign, they invest $4 billion a year for people to drink Coke. Do you know how much Wendy's advertise, how much they pay? Burger King? Okay, so look at our fast food joints.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, government has to, that's government's competition. Mm-hmm. They need Absolutely. To consider now, what do I do? How do I counteract? How do I counteract? That's the investment that's needed in public health, you know.
Absolutely, no question about it.
That's the investment we need in public health. Okay,
absolutely.
And so I'm not even getting to the individual health that when you go to the hospital or when you go to your post, I'm looking at the responsibility of providing what we call the context, okay, of what's the environment that we need to be in order to practice the best state of health that we should have. It is not as simple as people think it is.
Right.
Okay?
Because some things you have to drive people in that direction.
You got to drive. And that is where the government and enforcement become so. Yeah, you wouldn't believe that wearing helmets, okay? Wearing helmets is the law. The average person I see riding in the street on motorbikes, they don't have helmets.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
And doing pop wheelies.
That's right. And let me tell you, they come into the hospital, they come in injured, some died. And when mm-hmm. you look at how much it costs from the public purse for one of them to keep them alive, I'm not talking about $1,000. I'm talking $50,000 and $60,000 and $70,000 or more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Out of the public purse.
This text says, Doc, interesting topic with Dr. Roberts. Just a comment. He mentioned the blue zones and these areas of the world share common characteristics. One, they get that early morning sun. I do that too. What they eat, I do some of that. They said they exercise every day primarily through gardening and or walking. That's me. And they have a social and religious side in their life. In those blue zones, areas of the world where fast food has been introduced, the zone is shrinking. This confirms that fast food is bad for your health. Case in point, Wendy's has the most profitable restaurant here in the Bahamas. There are too many fast food restaurants here. Bahamians should reconsider their diets.
No, but I mean, do you remember the experiment of the fellow who decided to eat, I think it was Wendy's, every day for a month?
Mm-mm-mm.
And they were able to show you how much his cholesterol rose, how much his blood pressure rose, huh?
I don't want Wendy's think we beating them up, but they have very good healthy foods now.
They have some good healthy options.
Yeah, yeah. Okay? So it's the choices we're making, right?
It's a choice that you make. Okay. I love a good hamburger. Okay. But at the end of the day, you shouldn't be eating 3 hamburgers every day.
Or eating it 3-4 times a week.
These are the issues here. That's where the issues are.
This text says, thanks kindly for having in the month of June at pre-lunch one of our number one urologists, says this texter. This text says, hello, Mr. Lang. Men are afraid of being misdiagnosed by these physicians as many known cases of negligence and culpability. I know people who were diagnosed with debilitating diseases and after 2 opinions from foreign physicians, finding out that the diagnosis and surgical operation by the Bahamian was 100% incorrect, says this texter. Ask your guest if he has ever experienced that.
Oh, listen. Let's make it clear. Medicine, unfortunately, is not an absolute science. There's an art and there's a science to it. And there are times we don't make the right decisions. There are times when we might make wrong decisions. And in this modern day, we are held accountable to it. But let no one tell you that this is not unique in the Bahamas. The highest suits in the world happen in North America. At least one out of every three or rather every two or three physicians in America have been sued at least once.
Absolutely.
So it isn't that all of a sudden you have a doctor in the Bahamas that does not make a good diagnosis, whatever, that suddenly we have all the worst doctors in the world, or we have the worst healthcare system in the world. Not so. Every country that you have, okay, where you will have issues with regards to the whoever the healthcare provider was not treated as properly as they should have been, or diagnosed or whatever, the outcomes are not what we would like it to be. But everyone's different. Everyone's different.
Yeah,
you know,
But it's also a bit short-sighted to merely point to cases of misdiagnosis, which, as you indicated, happens everywhere in the world, because, as you say, it's a science, but it isn't a perfect science. There are things that certainly you can't and always know.
I'd just like to add one important point here about mm-hmm. this issue of malpractice.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of malpractice has come to surface in countries where healthcare is not a right of citizens. People are mm-hmm. paying for the healthcare. And so mm-hmm. when the results are not, when the outcomes are what's expected, then they want to sue like any other commodity. You practically don't hear about being sued in Canada or in Europe, countries where they have healthcare that is available and accessible, as equitable, as appropriate for all the people. You find that the malpractice rates are extremely small, almost negligible. This is a phenomenon where people are paying for their health care, where medicine, unfortunately, today has become a consumer item. Okay? And the biggest problem with consumerism is that people do not, as you said in the beginning of yoga, they do not educate themselves about their health or whatever the circumstances are in order to determine what is the best course of action to make themselves or to keep themselves happy.
Yeah, but like, because take the instance of my diagnosis and treatment options. You said to me, here are your options. And you said to me, you said, like, I'm a surgeon in that direction, but if you were speaking to a radiologist, they might lean in another direction. But the truth is, the evidence is that the results are six or one and a half a dozen of the other, but it's really up to you based on what you want to do. So you go and you think about it, blah, blah, blah. And I had to do the research. I had to go and consult otherwise, et cetera. And eventually we made a collective decision that has worked out for my benefit. And so I'm 58 years old. I've been to the doctor many, 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 many times. All the instances in which I was properly diagnosed and treated so that I could be alive today. Why are we not talking about cases of misdiagnosis?
But I just want to say something. There's a responsibility that we as physicians have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I would like to believe all physicians do it, but I definitely particle. And that is to inform patients, particularly when they have diagnoses that are life-changing events. When someone is diagnosed with a cancer, right? First of all, they look down the road, they see death coming. Their whole world changes. Their whole perspective of living changes. So it is very important for me, and particularly looking at the health literacy that we have men. When I diagnose a man with prostate cancer, I will not speak to you and give your diagnosis unless you bring in your spouse or someone close to you. Because you're gonna be trying to be a man, say, doc, I can handle it. Okay? And you can't. You're a human being. You have these life-threatening conditions. You need to have support. So I will try to communicate in a way that everyone understands the condition. I will tell them their choices that they have to make, and I will invite them to go and seek other opinions. I'm happy to refer them wherever they want to go. They need to be comfortable. And you need to spend the time to do that. That's a part of our responsibility as physicians. And when you have a physician that doesn't want to give you a second opinion, then you should think twice.
So
if you request it.
Sorry, go ahead.
If you request it, many of my patients said, more of my patients would tell me, no, doc, I'm quite happy with the explanation you've given me. I don't need to go anywhere.
Right. So if you us men a succinct path pursuing your good health wrapped up in many of the pieces of information you gave, let's start with point one again. Point one, to be more attentive to my health. First thing I should do is
you need to look at what are the common conditions that I am susceptible for. In my population, it is very clear what is common. We are dying from high blood pressure, we're dying from diabetes, we're dying with cancers, okay? So you need to at least know, okay? Am I free of diabetes? Am I free of high blood pressure? Am I clear of having any cancers? What is expected of me at my age and for my sex? Let me give you an example. Right? You know, although this is man's health, I always come back and I counteract that the number two or three cause, okay, I think it's number two cause of death in this country in women is cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm.
In 2026, cervical cancer is a totally preventable disease. No woman should die of cervical cancer if they go and get their pap test that they should as recommended. They don't.
Mm.
As a result of that, we see men coming in where the cancer has grown. Over half of them, when they come in, is already advanced disease. When I lived in Canada and I was studying in Canada, I never used to see this. I'm trying to count and scratch my head of ever seeing a woman that came in my service area dying because of cervical cancer.
And mostly because having not gotten scanned early, that disease metastasized throughout their
That's
body.
That's right. That's
to
right.
Kill them. Because simple, had it been caught earlier, it could have been dealt with.
A simple pap test that you go routinely to your doctor. And in fact, the amount of pap tests we've decreased, women, they're less likely to go. So when they say, oh, the men don't look after themselves, the women in our country don't look after themselves either. They're more obese than us. And they almost have the same amount of high blood pressure and diabetes as we have. Men have their special problems, women have major problems too.
Doc, I have plenty texts, and the only way we don't go is if you have to go, you could come back.
I'm quite settled.
Okay, super. Wonderful. We have to take a break for news, and then when we come back from the news break, then we'll continue our conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago here with Dr. Robin Roberts, urologist here in the Bahamas, trying to looking after their health a little bit more carefully. We'll be back after this news break.
Wendy's has brand new chicken tenders,
and they're everything you've been craving.
Crispy, juicy,
and seasoned just right.
These tenders bring the flavor from the very first bite.
Love them.
With sauces like sweet chili,
scorching hot,
ranch,
honey barbecue,
honey mustard,
and Wendy's signature sauce.
Grab them as a kid's meal.
Enjoy them on their own,
or make it a combo
that hits the spot
every time.
For tenders you're gonna know by name,
it's gotta be
investing. Check. But what if you could do more? With an RF brokerage account, you can get priority access to local investment opportunities right as they come to the market. Never miss a bond or new share offering again. Plus, you can house all your investments in one place and benefit from expert investment advice. Contact us at brokerage@rfgroup.com to start doing more today. Some conditions apply. RF, money at work.
Wow, it's 35 years already. Where has the time gone? Look at where we have come from. Caribbean Gas would like to say thank you to our valuable customers and our dedicated staff. Let's celebrate this, our 35th anniversary, from June 16th to July 6th with you. Giveaways, prizes, and surprises. If you spend $50, you are eligible to win a 100-pound cylinder, 50-inch TV, gas stove, AC unit, and much, much more. Visit us on Gladstone Road, Caribbean Gas. It's our 35th anniversary. Let's celebrate!
Great news! Ron's Electric Motors' new location on Cowpen Road, right next to Island Luck, is open Saturdays and Sundays. So for those needing repairs on electric motors, welding machines, water pumps, battery charges, lifts, transformers, and power tools, up and running on weekends. Don't forget, you can still visit Ron's Electric Motors on Wolf Road and Claridge Road, and now Ron's new location on Cowpen Road. Dial 356-0249 or 367.
At Star General, you can go gold. Comprehensive car insurance covers loss or damage from accidents, fire, theft, and third-party liability. But the gold package gives you increased coverage for rental car and windscreen, personal accident, medical benefits, to 24-hour roadside assistance where available. Our Star General Gold Package also gives you up to $2,500 for accidental damage to a rental car anywhere in the Bahamas. Go gold with Star General. Insurance made simple.
We go everywhere. Shop early at Janae's Chesapeake Road annual back-to-school sale going on now. Get up to 20% off on all school items in stock. Yes, all school items in stock. Shirts, jumpers, skirts, boys' long and short pants, school neckties, PE shorts, and a variety of colors and school monograms. Shop early and don't miss out at Janae's Uniform Center Chesapeake Road's annual back-to-school sale going on now. Remember, we go everywhere. Beat the rush and save, save, save at Janae now.
Put more money back in your pocket with the Fidelity Debt Consolidation Loan. Why pay more when you can pay less? Reduce your monthly debt payments down to one low, easy payment. Apply for a Fidelity Debt Consolidation Loan today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. Dr. Robin Roberts, urologist here in the Bahamas, about men's health and what we as men and people who love us can help us do to ensure that we avoid these awful diseases that are taking us, and also to just live a better quality of life. I don't know about you, but I love to be able to walk through the day with my energy leveled, not dipping and dropping. I love to feel strong. I love to feel like I'm alert. My mind isn't cloudy. And I love to know that when I check with the doctors and them, they say, yeah, Lang, seems like all your stuff are in order, or you need to look at this and check that and make this adjustment. Because then I know what to do. And, you know, I have a goal, Doc. I'm trying to make 100. I'm trying to make 100 and to do so. I know where you do it, but that's my aim.
Well, let me tell you some of the things that we can do as men to show you what preventive measures can give us such better outcomes and living longer. And I'm going to use... And I'll show you some of the challenges we have with being involved with the Cancer Society, that group of affiliated with the Cancer Society, the Us Two Men, which are men who most of them have, they've known to have prostate cancer, or they are someone who they know have prostate cancer, or they just want to be a part of the working team. So every year in September in Nassau, we have free prostate cancer screening clinics. We have one in the east, in the west, in the north, in the south, in the government clinics, Elizabeth Estate, Flamingo Gardens, South Beach Clinic, Fleming Street. We have them in the evenings at between 6 and 9, when men can't say they're working, they're more likely to be free. We provide the PSA at no charge. Okay? And now, trend, unfortunately, is to talk for a different day, whether you should do the rectal exam or not. That is also available, which I encourage. Mm-hmm. And I want to show last clinic. We average about 500 to 600 men a clinic. Last year, we saw approximately 500 men. And when we have our clinics and we have the men, we make sure we get their emails, we make sure they get their phone numbers, their addresses, so we can contact them. It's our responsibility to contact them to let them know what their results are. And true to form, they find that when you do this test on a population out there and you bring them in a healthy population, so to speak, you find about 10% of them have some abnormal findings that you have to investigate. Of that, if I include last year, okay, so so 25 and 24, we saw a total of about 1,000 plus men. And we actually found at least about 100 men in total that had abnormal blood tests or the examination regularly that we needed to do something else. Mm-hmm. And for those that might have needed that X-ray done, the MRI, we got Doctors Hospital and Oak Tree to give a 50% discount. Mm-hmm. If you came from us too to get that X-ray. And if you needed to have a prostate biopsy, it was done for you at no charge by us two. Hmm. Okay? And of the 100 men, and in addition, we had 6 follow-up clinics at no charge in the evening at the Cancer Society for all of those men that were found to be abnormal. And after 2 years, we have only had 30% of the men who came forward. Okay? What more do you need to know? I would like to think that if you did a blood test and you want to know the results, so if no one contacted you, which we all tried and our men, we found either they had the wrong phone numbers or this wasn't where they lived or they didn't give the wrong email or whatever, would you not have called the Cancer Society to say, could you give me the results of my test? What more do you do to say to the man, listen, the evidence is clear, you know, that those men, when they introduced the PSA testing and ran within 10 years in America by 2000, within 10 years by 2010, they had reduced the mortality of men dying from prostate cancer by 40%. And if you look at what has happened over the last 20 years, you find that for every 10 men that presented with prostate cancer before the PSA test, for every 10 men came where the cancer was outside the prostate.
Right.
And once they started using the PSA within 10 to 15 years, they had turned that around. We call that a stage migration. They have turned it around where now for every 10 men that came in, 80 plus of them came where the cancer was confined to the prostate. It had to spread outside. That's what early detection did.
Right.
And when I compare our clinics, we've been doing our clinics from 2004. We have had, us two clinics in Nassau, we have done well over 12,000 PSAs because every September, we do our free prostate cancer screen. And when we look at our results today, what do we find? That for every 10 men who come with prostate cancer in the Bahamas, 8 out of 10 come where the evidence suggests the cancer is outside the prostate. In other words, we are as if no PSA tests in existence.
Doc, we have, I believe, a caller on the line and then a number of people with some questions for you. Okay. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes. Good afternoon, Brother Lake.
Hey, what's happening?
Yeah, good afternoon. It's Dr. Robbie Roberts.
Yes, it is. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I hope you know who this is. I don't want to call my name, but you and my pa, he used to rob me to come to you, but my mom brought me to you. His name is A.B., and so we used to come sit up in your office, and so I want to know.
52, everybody knows who he is, man.
He saved my life. He saved my life because everybody was scared for me when I was waiting, right? So he put me in the first line, I mean, the preface, because I couldn't sit down. It just the worst pain in the world. And so I go in the bathroom. I've been working there. People couldn't believe I came out smiling because they wondered what happened. Because I was like, it's so much pain and so much discomfort, right? Like, when the people came out and they see, the sigh relief, there's so much urine came out of me. I guess my bladder might have been ready to burst. It was so distended. But, Robbie, last time I had a discussion with you was about the vascular regrowth. And you know how big my prostate was, but the thing is, I just called it. Like, I want to talk with you. I wish I could talk to you privately to find out some things that you have experienced that I have not. But what I wanted to share was the fact that you guys are dead spot about the PSA because my men line call is low numbers. I had those numbers for years, but I was always cancer free. So it's actually the increase in the PSA that draws the concern and not the actual number itself because line calling, for me, you call in low numbers, right? Right, Robbie? 4 and 3 and. 5 and, you know, my own size, I think 5 or 4 or 3. What I'm saying is, those numbers are low for me. And I was doing it from I was 48. Island Luck offered the free one last year, so I did it last year. And I'm about to do it again for this year. But I encourage everybody to go and do it. Robbie, I appreciate you much, man. And, you know, you walked in the hospital to me when Dr. Pinto was dealing with me, and I had this problem, you saying some type of ischemia. So you always showed interest. And, you know, my pa, he would come on the ward even when he ain't supposed to, but. You all have a good day. I'll hang up and listen, but Lang, I'd like to talk with you. Just some personal questions I don't want to ask for now. Give thanks.
No problem.
I just want to interject and tell you whereby we would say the upper limit and normal for PSA is 4. You know, that's when it starts to move. So you get a little concerned when the PSA comes in over 20 and 30 and 40. I have men come to me when their PSA is, my record PSA is 35,000.
I mean,
okay. I'm used to seeing men coming with the PSAs in the thousands.
Yeah,
that's how they got.
First of all, 52. Let me tell you guys something. You ask me any question on air or off air. I made an intentional decision to go public with my diagnosis and process and treatment because I wanted to use that as a help. To men to get out of this. I ain't no private nothing for me. I tell you what happened, what has happened since, I don't have no problem with that at all. I want you all to know, right? Because we have to be sensible as men to save our lives so that we are available for our children, our spouses, available for our families, available for our communities. Doc, we have this text says, Doc, I was 72 years old last March. A patient of yours for a very, very long time. I live in Andrus. Love listening to you. I visit you every year. Thanks to you, Doc, for your advice. You give me great joy when you told me last March that I will never have prostate cancer. Amen. Okay.
It's very, when you reach around 70 and you have a PSA that's less than 1.
Mm-hmm.
Then the evidence shows that the chances you getting prostate cancer is practically zero. In fact, in some countries, they will tell you when your PSA is that over age of 60, they tell you don't do any more PSAs.
This text says, I think they were referring to the example you used. It was McDonald's, not Wendy's, they're saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. They're both fast food chains.
This text says...
I just want to interject and give you an example of men who are preventive. And I can call his name because he has been public. He was, you know, he came and we had a on the airwaves. He was president of the Cancer Society. But a young man, Mr. Bethel, his father died of prostate cancer. He was our first president of the US2 group. And his son decided from the age of 38, although he recommend 40, from the age of 38, that he was going to do his PSA. And when he reached 39, his PSA jumped from 1 to 3. Now, when you are 40, your PSA should be less than 2 because your prostate is jumping. And so I said, this doesn't feel right. So at the age of 39, I biopsied him, found he had prostate cancer. He decided he was going to have a radical prostatectomy. He had his prostate removed. That was over 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. His PSA this year was 0.
Mm.
Okay? So the point I want to make is that is the type of prevention that you want to have. That's the type of knowledge you want to have to know what's happening, particularly if you have someone in your family. You got someone that you got a brother, you got your dad or whatever that process is. You are a much higher risk, 2 to 3 times higher than the average man. But you should make sure that the year doesn't pass without you checking your PSA.
But you know what keeping these men from looking at their prostate and finding out something might be wrong? Because then when you have to have these discussions about whether any treatment might mean you can't get an erection, and when they start getting scared and think, I don't want to live that life, I'd rather take the risk and die from prostate cancer, because a lot of men believe that being able to get an erection on demand, the way they have always done, is the be-all and end-all of being a man.
Well, I'm going to tell you two aspects of that. First of all, you are correct to say that when you have some treatments for prostate cancer, that it can impact your ability to have a normal erection as you would have as a younger fellow. But as we always say, as you, Rogers, if you can't raise the dead, we can prop him up. We can always find a way to give you an erect penis. So the question is not whether we can do it. The question is how far you are prepared to go to have that done. But the interesting point about that is this. I want to put it to you that when you see a man reach his 50s, the evidence, the scientific evidence that's shown from every country, that when a man reaches in his 40s and 50s, at least 50% of men have a problem with having a normal erection. And in that group, what you find is that up to 15% of them might actually not be able to have it at all. Mm-hmm. And then you have another group that can have it halfway. Then you have another one that needs a little help. And for every 10 years, and if you have high blood pressure and diabetes, or both, or high cholesterol, that's where we fall in the country. So I want to put it to you that most of the men who, when they come looking to check for prostate cancer, already have an erection problem. So they are actually fooling themselves or denying themselves that something's going to happen to me. It happened already. I put it where I want to challenge men. I said, being silent, you know, and one of the issues we have about men is that, unlike women discuss, they talk about their conditions, they share it with other women and so on. Men don't do that. Now, we will talk all day, all night, whether the Knicks should have won the championship in 4 games instead of 5, who's mm-hmm. going to win the football game, who's mm-hmm. going to win. You know, we can talk all day about sports. We can talk all day about who got the most money, the most power. We don't discuss that. We don't discuss it, you know.
Especially if it involves down there and what's happening
absolutely.
Down there.
Absolutely.
You ain't want that discussion with nobody. Absolutely. Nobody on planet A. Please.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Please. So I tell people, dog, there wasn't a possible chance I was going to die to be able to have no sex.
So I can suggest to you that is why a lot of men, and you can imagine them thinking that their wife might be doing something on them. So if that's the thought of it, I would suggest to you that's a component for men in all this domestic-based violence we have. I would suggest to you that all our heavy drinking and smoking grass and so on, that may make a contribution as well. So we see it in a different light. Okay? So when you know, and when you sit down and talk, that is the reason why I make sure that the spouses are with the men, because I explain to the women, and I can tell you, the biggest joke I have with advanced disease, and I tell them that, well, you know, in treating advanced disease, one of the procedure, one of the options, instead of getting medication, might involve doing a minor operation on the testes, just like how a woman might have to remove her breast, or maybe remove her ovaries.
Mm.
And when I mention that, and I say to the spouse, you know, well, you know, it means that you wouldn't be able to have an erection again. The women are the first one to jump up and say, but doc, he ain't been having one for the last 10 years.
Sometimes, yeah. they may. But sometimes, as you also know, that is a very serious decision for them too, especially the young on the young end. And they feel like that's, you know, that's part of their intimacy, and that's gonna be challenged. So it's a serious contemplation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I went through the process of deciding on my treatment, of course I had to think about that too. But I honestly, I mean, maybe, and we are all at different places in our lives and in our perception of life, and a really big part of the issue for me, it was always an issue of what's the best means to good health for me.
And this is where what we call the social determinants of health have an impact on our forces outside, have an impact on diseases inside. And one of them is culture.
Mm.
And the culture that we live in our country, the culture in which we are raised as men, is we are raised to be macho. And one of the things I want to say when someone says, oh, but man don't have to be like this, and they don't have to be so hard, and they don't have to be emotionless. They should go to the doctor. So all those negative aspects that compile to what we call masculine toxicity, that you have to realize that when you live in a culture that from the time you are born, from the minute you pop out, to when you reach about 14 or 15, essentially you are like in a boot camp. Just like that's why when you go in the army, they put you first in a boot camp for 3 to 6 months. You are not supposed to think. You are just supposed to do. You are to conform to the norms, instructions, behave appropriately. So when we look at how we raise our men in society, it's like for the first 14 years of life, we're in a boot camp. This is how you're supposed to be as a man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so when you reach now 14, 15, you're already indoctrinated in this toxic masculine culture. It's hard to change.
Mm.
You know what it is to change your behavior after that? You know what it is to get used to expressing your emotions to a woman, telling her how you feel because she's your best friend? The most difficult thing in the world. You need to have, that's when we talk about a man's cave. We need to be able to have a gathering where men can get together and talk and be honest with each other and to share their experiences and to realize that it is okay not to be like that. So we got a lot of issues that need to resolve in how we raise our men. Cultures, and when you look at the things that we take for granted, for example, I like to use that, you know, when we look at how we raised boys before, there were certain things that were pertinent, okay? We used to say, this is what makes you a man. The first thing makes you a man when you became a teenager is you got to trade, okay? You got to learn how to be a good worker, an honest worker, and be excellent in your skill. And then you go, and once you save your money, you buy a piece of property, you build a house, and then you go to the father's house and you say, I want to take your daughter's hand in marriage.
Man, when I was growing up, the first thing you had to do when you was a teenager to prove you was a man is you had to tell somebody you had to have that girl. You had her, you know. Secondly, then after that, when you come out of school and then you got a car.
That's right.
You got a car. That's what you have, a car. Mm-hmm. Marriage? Marriage? They talk about marriage like a man getting a disease. He's getting married? Oh my God, what's wrong with him?
Mm-hmm. Right? So
Things change.
Yeah. So it's amazing the impact of culture on what creates us the way we are. And you know, times have changed significantly.
We have this text says, thanks kindly for having in the month of June at pre-lunch one of our... I read that before. So good afternoon, Mr. Lang and Dr. Roberts. Sir, you prescribed some medicine for my enlarged prostate, but sir, I can't find them in the pharmacy in Eleuthera, says this texter.
Oh, I just it's called my office and we can call the pharmacy in Eleuthera and renew them for it. They should be.
This text says, hello to my childhood friend and sometimes antagonist. This is Heads. We share a challenge from our era, giving to our children what was not readily given to us. This, for many men, is a work in progress, an inspiration to many, says that texter.
Thank you, Heads.
This text says, very good show, Mr. Lang. I knew someone whose PSA was 15 and he never had surgery and lived to be 97. My question to your guest is, does a high PSA confirm prostate cancer, even if you have an enlarged prostate with the only symptoms of urinating once at night and having no other discomforts or symptoms of being unhealthy or sick? Doc, can I just say what you told me when I came with my high
PSA? Yes, please go ahead.
You said a high PSA does not mean you have prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. You said that. What it does mean is we have to pay attention and we see the rate of growth, et cetera. And over time, we then have to go ahead and do some further investigation, whether that's an MRI or a biopsy, which is the only way to confirm prostate cancer is a biopsy.
I want to reiterate that if you are being treated for prostate cancer and you have not had a biopsy, that is not the standard of care. That's not. You should not be treated for any cancer unless you have what we call a tissue diagnosis and proven in the lab that is cancer. That is the first thing. I want to mention 2 points here. And one is that prostate cancer. Prostate cancer is very, very unique. Unique in the sense that, if I were to put it in the simple terms, when you have a cancer, there are basically two types. There's the very slow-growing cancer, and there's the very slow-growing prostate cancer literally might take 15, 20 years or more to show itself. So if the cancer doesn't bother you for 15 years, why you need to bother it? And if you're 80 years of age, the chances of you living to 95 is small, or if you were 70, you could get another good 15 years that you're in your mid-80s, keeping an eye on the cancer as long as it remains a slow-growing cancer. In fact, that now has become a major treatment for men who have prostate cancer that is confined to the prostate. The evidence shows it hasn't spread outside the prostate. So we need to know 3 things. We need to know if the PSA is less than 20. We need to know that it shows the cells that are not fast-growing cells. And we have all the evidence to show that the cancer has not spread to grow into the outside of the prostate. So if you have those 3 elements that define, and you don't need to have radiation, or you don't need to have surgery, that is now called active surveillance. We will watch you to see how the cancer progresses if it doesn't progress. And now we have 15-year research data that shows that if you have early prostate cancer that's confined to the prostate, if you decide to treat it by removing the prostate by any means necessary, so you got a radical prostatectomy, why do you do it open? Where do you do pinhole? Where do you do the robot? You remove the prostate. Where do you decide to have radiation in terms of blasting it or giving seeds or whatever? Or whether it falls into the slow-growing type, and you just decide to watch it. Well, they have completed that study for men for 15 years to see if they had made a difference in terms that they live longer, did they live better? Whether they had the surgery, whether they had the radiation or whether it was. And what they found at 15 years is that 90% plus of the men were still alive and well and had not died from prostate cancer. They might have died for something else in another group. Okay? And they showed that the ability was the same. Less than 3% have had a progression of the cancer. They were able to control it. So therefore, what it boils down to is you have to sit down, you have to educate the men and the family to show them their options. And I would say to my folks that what I find in my practice is there are the basic groups of men. There's the first group of men who tell you, doc, I want surgery. Cut it out of me. I don't want no cancer in me. And however you, I deal with what happens afterwards. Then I have another group who tells me, listen, doc, I don't want no cut. They say, when you cut, the cancer spread. I don't want to be cut down and pain and all that. I don't want no surgery. Give me radiation. And then you have another guy and say, doc, you mean I might get away without having surgery or radiation? If I fit that group, I won't do that. You need to make that choice of which type you have. So you got to be educated. Or you go find opinions and see which one might be what best, which ones you, what group you fit into, and what might work for you. So this is a very complicated process. And so we call that, we call this the informed decision process, joint decision process. Okay, together, the providers and the family, together, we look at the options, we make the decision, and we move forward.
We have a couple of callers on the line, Doc, and then we have to take a break for our sponsors. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you if you're still on the line.
Yeah, good afternoon. Very very timely and informative show.
And, thank you.
I would like to ask Doc about the Avodart and the Tamsulosin. What happens when you take those two medications, however, you still end up going to the bathroom like several times a night? And I would like him to, you know, say something about BPH.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
I did a cystoscopy. However, no cancer was detected, you know.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Now, I would say when I give a lecture or I talk to my patients, I get them to appreciate the uniqueness of the prostate gland. I tell them that as we age, okay, everything in our body dies. Our hair drops out, turns gray, the skin wrinkles, the bones get soft. So when we reach around 40, we just slowly go downhill, except for the prostate. It's the only thing in our body when we reach the age of 40, it takes on a new life. It starts to grow, and it never stops growing. And that happens in all men. Now, and when it starts to grow, a prostate that's about the size, at 40, a prostate is about the size of a sour lime. We say a walnut. And when that starts to grow, it can get as big as a golf ball, as big as a lemon, as big as an orange, as big as a grapefruit. And because of where it sits under the bladder, it presses on the bladder as it gets bigger. So you have problems here. You start to pee fast. Not all the urine comes out. The bladder fills up more quickly. When you want to go, you got to go. You got to wake up at night. Those are the issues related to the prostate getting big. This benign prostate, okay, has nothing to do with cancer. It never becomes a cancer. Okay? So that happens. So if I had 100 men at the age of 40 and I followed them through to 70 or 80, every one of them at 70 or 80 will have a bigger prostate. So when you go to your doctor, okay, and they tell you at 70 or 80, your prostate is bigger, I expect you to have a bigger prostate. That's the natural trend of things. Now, if you look at that, if I had 100 men like that, and I follow them through till when they reach 70 or 80, the most interesting thing is almost half of them never have any symptoms, no matter how big the prostate is, never have any symptoms. And then you have the next half, they are peeing and waking up at nights and so on, or they might even have a complete blockage because it got so big. I need surgery and all sort of things to be able. That's benign prostate. Now, total and separate apart, a cancer can occur in the prostate. As the cancer grows, it will do the same thing that the benign prostate grows does. It'll get bigger, it compresses the bladder, and you can have the same symptoms. So they fool each other. Now, the treatment for this benign growth of the prostate, we actually have medications that can shrink the prostate, so alleviate a lot of the symptoms. And then you have medications that can open up the bladder better, that again can relieve the symptoms. And when you find the two of the medications together, so that is what the Avodart does, okay? And that is what the Tamsulosin or Flomax does. The two of them work in harmony, and they give you the best results. But even though they're working well, the prostate still continues to grow. So you might find after a while, the medication ain't working anymore. So when you have a problem where the prostate has become so big that where you can't pee, you're totally blocked up, or you're bleeding, or it affecting the kidneys, or you have some stones in the bladder because of that, or recurrent infection, now you need surgery. That surgery, and it's a very important point, that surgery has nothing to do with cancer. And you don't want to do the type of surgery you do for cancer because the complication is too high. So we do a simple procedure to take out the blocking part of the prostate. And the reason why I emphasize that is this. When we take out the blocking part of the prostate, and we got these nice new procedures where you don't have to do any cutting on the outside. You might only need to be in hospital for a day or 2 days. You don't have that much bleeding. You got a whole variety that's available to you. And you should have a discussion of which one might be best for you. But having said that, at the end of the day, when you remove the blocking part, you never remove 100% of the prostate. You always leave some behind. And the part that's left behind is the part that can become cancerous. So when you, for most reasons, if you are getting your prostate out, you need to remove because of cancer. You got it because it's a benign prostate. So you should still continue to have your PSAs every year, even though you had your prostate out. So that's the difference I want.
Super. Doc, we have another caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
All right. Thanks, Shivago. Thanks, Doc. A couple quick questions.
By the way, just so you all know, if Doc wants to come back anytime soon, because I can tell we can run out of time, he's free to do that because I men are concerned. And so, Doc, that's an open invitation. Go ahead, sir.
Thanks for the clarification for that. One is, if a husband is sexually active, I mean, I have my test done, but if you actually are sexually active with an erection, is that unlikely that you have prostate or an enlarged prostate? Is that an indication that you're probably not having something that's going to lead to prostate cancer or high, whatever those numbers are? And secondly, you might have touched on it.
I had prostate cancer and was able to have normal erections, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So don't forget, when the prostate cancer starts, it starts off small. It might be the size of a BB gun shot. It's so small, you can't feel it. The doctor can't even feel it. You wouldn't know it's there. And as that gets bigger, like the size of a marble, again, you mightn't feel anything. You continue normal weight. But as it gets bigger and starts to occupy the whole inside of the prostate, now you start to have problems where it can affect those nerves that go into the penis for erection, or as it starts to affect the urinary function, we've come to realize that these bladder problems also affect your ability to have erection. So in the beginning, you can have normal erections, normal excitement, doing everything as normal and so on, and not appreciating that the prostate is growing like mad, and it's only a matter of time before it shows itself.
So that brings me to the next question then. So is there certain foods, I think you mentioned it, but I came in a tail end, forgive me, whatever I missed. Is there, if we eat a certain healthy diet, or is it also can be passed on hereditary? And then the last point, and then you could cover whatever you want to cover. Is it, I even forget, but thank you. I leave it there. I forgot another point. Appreciate it. Thank you.
I would reiterate a point I made earlier to emphasize.
Yes.
Number one, okay? If you have a family history of prostate cancer, your father, your brother, your uncle, you are 2 to 3 times more likely to have prostate cancer. So you should definitely, when you are 40 years old, you are at high risk. Number two, we have shown that a fat-based diet, okay, and that's what we have in the Bahamas, especially a red meat-based diet. That's what we have in the Bahamas. We like to eat our greasy foods. We like to fry our pork chops and all that stuff. Now they showing that in this high fat diet, where and if you have a high or basically a vegetarian based diet, they found that that diet gives you a higher risk to have prostate cancer. Now the key thing, the message here is this: there's evidence to show, strong evidence, that if you have a lifestyle that's a vegetarian-based diet, and you exercise in regularly as recommended, at least 45 minutes a day, 5 days a week, that you will decrease the onset of getting prostate cancer. And if you have prostate cancer and you are being treated, that it decreases the chances of the cancer coming back. So I can't emphasize how important it is in terms of looking at your diet and your physical activity, in terms of decreasing the onset or the progression of prostate cancer.
Okay. Doc, we got to take a final break here. And when we come back, I got to read these other texts. People have some questions for you. But we'll do that after we come back from the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this.
Through the storm, whatever weather, cold, you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
At Cleveland Clinic, you set your course, not cancer. So when your journey takes an unexpected turn, you seek out the experts who've conquered it before, and you forge new paths to help fight cancers. For every route to a cure, for every care in the world. See how we're innovating cancer care at Cleveland Clinic today.
Struggling to find your financial rhythm? Make that move to Fidelity and let us help you orchestrate your financial goals into perfect harmony with free financial coaching sessions. Make that move today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Are you a tourism business owner or ready to become one? At the Tourism Development Corporation, we work with tourism entrepreneurs at every stage, turning ideas into thriving businesses and helping existing ones grow. From business development support and funding opportunities, to targeted initiatives and strategic partnerships, we're here to help you take that next step. Build your future in tourism with the Tourism Development Corporation. Visit tdcbahamas.com to learn more.
Guess who's back?
It's the time again for the 31st annual Michael Scudery Peace on the Streets Basketball Classic.
Bring it on now, let's go.
Whether you're a player or a fan, you don't want to miss this one. The action starts July 13th at the Hope Center. Log on to peaceonthestreets.com and register.
Come on, everybody.
Streets Basketball Classic.
Where we shoot hoops instead of guns.
Game time.
Progressive Jackpot is on fire at Everybody Wins Live. First, a player won over $20,000 in cash. Then, another player took home over $30,000 in cash. That's more than $50,000 in jackpot winnings already. Now, the jackpot has reset and is growing again. With a minimum $10 bet, you could be eligible for the next big win. Lottery, casino, and sportsbook only at Everybody Wins Live, where winnings live.
Mic drop.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shibago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. Let me remind you, we were going to be rescheduling that, so we're going to have a whole week of health talks, okay? You know, we want to be mindful of the politics of our country. We want to be mindful of the economics and all these other issues that are front and center, but there are lots of people in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas who are struggling with health issues, who are struggling with medical issues, with mental wellness issues and the like, and people who are trying to do their best to avoid those things. So we're going to dedicate a week to just talking about health issues, and whatever the politics go and however it go that week, well, too bad, too sad. We can deal with that, and hopefully even on that occasion we can have people like Doc come back and again address some of these questions that you may have. Again, I have with me Dr. Robin Roberts, urologist, a man who guided me through one of the most serious medical health issue I have ever had. I never thought about it, even though I knew the possibility existed that I would ever hear the words, yeah, you have prostate cancer. but if you ever have to deal with an issue like that, you want a doctor like Dr. Roberts, because he ain't dramatic, he ain't playful, but he walks you through the issues and lets you know clearly and precisely what is the issue and what the options are you need to be mindful of and so forth and so forth, so that you can make a clear-headed decision. And that was something. And you know, let me tell you all something. I tell you all this. Doc said to me, I said, Doc, you know, there's a urologist in the U.S. I'm going to go and talk to, get a second opinion. He's very highly ranked in the Florida area. And Doc said, well, I think you will find that visit very interesting. And as sure as night followed it, that is exactly what I found. But you know, when I left his office, I left with such uncertainty as to what he was suggesting to me that I said to myself, you know, I had greater clarity talking to Dr. Roberts, so let me go back and tell him, let's go do the surgery and move. That was my experience, Doc.
I remember a very prominent Bahamian. I could pronounce his name because he's gone public. Always remember, I diagnosed his prostate cancer. And the first thing he wanted to have an opinion, he wanted to get a second opinion. So he went off. He just in his voice, he went off and he came back about 2 weeks later and he said, good, I've seen X amount of consultants, I've radiation, surgery and everything and so on. They said everything that you said. Okay, let's get to the surgery.
Well, not only did my second opinion man tell me everything you said, he said, oh, I know Dr. Roberts, very good urologist. That's what he tell me. So, Doc, let me get, because we run out of time. This text says, so what, Robbie, in the thousands? I guess they're saying, what in the thousands? Wow, Lang, I always said I appreciate your bold disclosures. This says that texter. This text says, Lang, I don't have or had any problems with erections. I had BP terps. I don't know what that means.
That is a benign prostate enlargement.
Right.
Okay, so that happens in all men, and he probably one of those where it has gotten so big it blocked up the bladder. And so the procedure that we do, the urine passage in the penis, and so since you're going through it, it's called trans, and that passage is the urethra. So we said trans urethral, and you resect, you take out the blocking part of the prostate. So that's urethral prostatectomy.
I see. Okay. Doc, you know, I was explaining to some friends of mine, we graduated high school together, my process, and I indicated that I had not had any symptoms. And do you know that one of the guys in there told me, you got to be crazy, like, man, come stop talking nonsense. You had to have some symptoms. And I told him, I said, none. I only knew because my PSA was rising.
I make one statement. The symptom of prostate cancer is no symptom at all. That's the most common symptom of prostate cancer. That's when you are picking up. You have no symptoms.
And only scanning can do that. Only screening can do that.
Only screening can do that. Because when you come, when you have symptoms, that's advanced disease.
This text says, thank you, Brother Lang. So every man will have prostate cancer. That is confined to the prostate? That's what the question.
Oh boy, now that's a tricky one. Let me put it to you this way. The prostate in its uniqueness, as the only gland in the body that starts to grow as you get older, we've also found that it's the only gland in the body, if you live long enough, it will eventually have a start of a cancer. But most of those cancers that occur as we age are those types of cancer and never bothers. That's why it's important for us to identify this low state of growth of a prostate cancer. Very important.
Right.
Because what we end up with and how we've gotten a bad name with prostate cancer is because prior to us appreciating that, we have been doing a lot of unnecessary surgeries, unnecessary treatments, causing all kind of complications that didn't have to be done in the first place. And that has been a major paradigm shift in the treatment of prostate cancer today.
And
to
if you
identify that slow-growing prostate cancer that might not need treatment and that might decrease the chances of men having or needing to have any of those expensive procedures.
Right. This text says, Dr. Robbie, I had two TURPs. Does this predisposition me to get prostate cancer? I don't eat red meat from my early 30s. I am 61. I have had a biopsy from I was 50.
The only thing I would say to you, the average urologist anywhere in North America or Europe, and to say that at 61 you already had two TURPs, that is very unusual. One would have to question what were the indications for you to have a tumor. That's unusual. The average person who needs surgery on the prostate because benign prostate, if you were to do a study, it's usually men in their late 60s and 70s. It's unusual to have to do a prostate operation on a man in his 40s. I've been a practice for 40 years. And I can count the amount of men who in their 40s I had to do a TURP on a hand and have it left over. It's unusual. Unusual for me to do TURP operations, at least generally. And what they have found, when TURP was the primary cause of treatment, they found that in the USA, well published, that almost 40% of TURPs that were done were not necessary.
All right, we are plumb out of time, Dr. Roberts. Thank you so very much for being as your usual informative self. And I look forward to us having some more talks to educate and elevate this population of ours. Again, thank you so very much, sir.
And we can come back again in September when we're getting ready for our screening month.
Super. Look forward to it. All right. Take care, ladies. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. God spares life. We'll be back with you again tomorrow. Y'all have a fantastic afternoon.